All right, what's up, Pound Lake family? Great to see you guys. My name is Mike Bro, in case we never met before, and I get to be on the teaching team at this remarkable place. I want to welcome all the campuses, Starkville, Oxford, Madison, Clinton, the Res, those of you that might be joining us online as well. Now, you know that your family, when certain things happen to you, many of you know that I was born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky, and therefore I'm a big University of Kentucky Wildcat basketball fan. I'm eating up with March Madness and all that kind of stuff. So when I got here today, this was laying on my chair, St. Peter's Peacocks, who took us out of the tournament. I mean, I'm just so grateful to have friends like these guys. Yeah, it was great to be with you guys. Chip's been walking us through a little series all about hope. And we got the Day of Hope that's coming up on April the 9th. We're going to flood communities with the hope of Jesus Christ by doing practical, compassion things. And then we get to celebrate Easter the next week, celebrating our ultimate hope found in Jesus Christ. Last weekend, if you're with us, we got to hear the amazing Catherine Wolfe and her husband, Jay. If you did not hear that, you need to get online and check it out. Just talk about hope through suffering. Their book, Suffer Strong, is one of my wife's favorite books of all time. And I've said it a bunch around here in the past, but there's a lot of things in life that just get overrated. March Madness teams like mine get overrated. Restaurants get overrated. Movies get overrated. Books get overrated. Vacation destinations get overrated. New car models. Lots of things in life are overrated. Hope's not one of them. Hope's not one of them. When we get trapped in a tunnel of misery, it's hope that points to the light at the end. When we're overworked and exhausted, it's hope that gives us fresh energy. When we're tempted to quit, it's hope that keeps us from throwing in the towel. When we lose our way and confusion blurs the destination, it's hope that helps us from panicking. When we struggle with a lingering illness or a crippling disease, it's hope that helps us push through the pain. When we're just forced to sit back and wait, it's hope that gives us patience. When we fear the worst, hope reminds us that God is still in control. When we have to say our final farewell to the people we love the most, it's hope that gets us through our grief. There's a lot of things in this life that are overrated. Hope is not one of them. And man, I've been praying that you would experience the hope that Jesus Christ came to give you. Yeah, you. Because he gives hope to anybody who really wants it. Now, if you're at one of our campuses today, you'll notice that we have lots of doors. We got exterior doors. We got interior doors. There are classroom doors. There are restroom doors, office doors. Got glass doors, wood doors, metal doors, hinge doors. We got sliding doors and roll-up doors. I'm guessing between all the campuses combined, there's probably close to like maybe 1,000 doors. And that's a lot of WD-40, you know what I'm saying? And my experience with doors is that every time somebody hangs a door, someone else comes along and slaps a sign on it. And some of those signs that we find on doors we're grateful for. Like if you get off a long flight and you're kind of frantically looking for a door with one of these signs, right? You're going, I got to find one of those places. How many of you have ever gone on the wrong one? I've never have, but Chip told me it's really embarrassing. and now we've got these, gender neutral restroom signs. But really, that's nothing new. Because way back in the day, my Aunt May, who lived in the sticks of Muddy Ford, Kentucky, had a gender-neutral sign on her bathroom door. It looked like this. That's no kid. I was scared to death of going in that room as well when I was a kid. Ever walk up to the door and see him push and pull, and you go, which one am I supposed to do? Which one am I supposed to push or pull? And aren't you glad that these signs are slowly going away? I mean, it's never been a big deal to me. I will gladly put one on if that means I'm going to love my neighbor better. I've not complained about it one time, but I can't count the number of times I've walked up to a door and go, oh, dang it, I got to go back to my truck. I forgot my mask, right? Some of you are probably glad that these signs are coming down too. Now, I'm grateful for technology, but it's good to be face-to-face around a table again, isn't it? Then there are signs like this that just make you want to do bad things, right? Let's see if that's really true, right? Or maybe you're driving at night and you're running low on fuel and you're kind of in the middle of nowhere and you see these lights ahead to a gas station and you pull in hoping, praying that you will see like, oh yeah, yes, yes, they're open. It's such a good feeling. On the other hand, you forget to get that special birthday gift for your wife that's only at that one specific store, the only place you can get it, and you get there at like 5:02 and you see this sign, you go, oh man, I am dead, right? Perhaps some of you have even walked through a door like this recently and you received a diagnosis that just rocked your world. And last week's talk with Catherine and Jay Wolf could not have come at a better time for you. You know, sometimes we'll see a sign like this, emergency exit only. In other words, go here only if you gotta get out. But just know when you do, everybody's gonna know that you're leaving. And it made me think how some people right now, they know they need to make an exit. They know they need to get out of an abusive relationship. They got to get out of the destructive cycle of addiction. They got to get out of that circle of friends that keeps dragging them down. But they fear walking through that exit door. Because, I don't want to set off alarms and let everybody know that I'm out. Sometimes it takes a lot of courage just to walk out the door. Some people put this sign on their front door. No surveys, no religious tracts, no Girl Scout cookies, no solar panels. And some are so serious about this, they'll put up this sign. And I said no soliciting. You want to get eaten alive? Come on, come on. And some will just say, listen, forget the dog, forget the polite ass, just stay away or you're going to get shot. And sometimes we want people to stay away. Maybe you go to, go to like a little romantic getaway weekend and we'll hang one of these signs on the door to say, hey, just leave us alone. Sometimes you're navigating through like an unfamiliar place and you'll come upon a sign like this on the door that says, authorized personnel only, communicating, only really qualified people are allowed inside this door. And then, of course, there's the exclusive sign that stopped us all in our tracks. We go, oh, I can't go through that door because I'm not a member of that club. I don't fit in. I don't belong here. Now, tragically, sometimes you'll come to a church and you'll see signs on the door. Not literally hanging there, but you can feel them. Because churches sometimes give off unspoken signs, very real signals that you just kind of sense in your spirit. Maybe there's a sign hanging there that says, who the heck are you? And what are you doing here? Or maybe a sign that says, hey, you go change your clothes and you come back. Or maybe a sign that says, oh, I'm sorry, your skin's the wrong color. You need to go to church with your own people. Or maybe you've sensed a sign that says, you got questions about God? Well, don't bring them in here. Because we're all already convinced. There's no room for your doubts here. There's no room for your skepticism here. Or maybe a sign that just seems to say, okay, let's be honest. We really do want your money. Or maybe a huge flashing sign that you sense is, look at you walking through this door. After all that you have done, come on. You're not fooling anybody. You know who you are. There is no hope for you. You know, lots of people felt that way in Jesus' day. There's a whole bunch of members-only signs hanging on doors. The religious people, the Pharisees, they had their exclusive little God club, and only certain people fit that profile. You ever feel like you don't fit the profile? Ever felt like you just don't belong? I was sitting at a gate in an airport years ago, and they were doing the now boarding our emerald status, now boarding our sapphire, our platinum, our diamond, our ruby, our silver. I turned to the guy next to me and said, hey, have they called denim yet? He laughed and goes, man, I'm waiting for camo, So, but you ever felt second class? Like you were on the outside looking in? Ever been picked last for a game like a recess in school? Or you didn't even get picked at all? They just said, okay, yeah, you got him. Or ever been cut from a team? Ever been laid off from a job? Ever been rejected for a date? Ever just felt inferior, kind of less than, left out? I mean, those experiences can leave you with a skewed perception of what God is like. Think, well, God must only like perfect people. Because, I've heard that God's very, very picky. He's very selective. And I know I'll never measure up, so why even try? He would never want to hang out with a person like me anyway. I met a woman who visited one of the churches I served. She had come for the first time and hadn't been in church in over 20 years. Felt like God wanted nothing to do with her. She equated God to her abusive dad as like a drill sergeant just waiting for her to step out of line, drop the hammer on her, say, "I told you so." So she stayed away a long time. But a friend invited her to come, walked through the door with her, said, "Let's give God another shot." So she came. And now in this particular church, much like Pine Lake would never boastfully say, "We're the best church on the planet." However, this church might say, "We are the best smelling church on the planet," because they got coffee everywhere. I mean, as soon as you walk through the doors, you just smell coffee. It's super chill atmosphere, very welcoming place, much like Pine Lake. And she and her friend grab an espresso or something like that, and they come on in. And she sat there with her coffee in hand and cried all the way through the service. I mean, God just touched her very, very deeply. And she walked out wiping tears and turned to her friend and said, "I never dreamed that God would want to have a cup of coffee with me." See, Jesus came in part to dispel the misperceptions and reveal what God is really like. In hanging out with and eating with and sharing a cup of coffee with all kinds of people, Jesus was making a big statement about the character of God. When I left home for college, I started studying the life of Jesus, and I was blown away with how he touched people, all kinds of people. Outcast people, oppressed people, segregated people, forgotten people, messy people. He got involved with those people. He got down in the dirt with them. He broke down all kinds of gender and racial bias. He ripped signs off of doors. He kicked them open and radically moved into places that no one had ever dared go before, all the while motioning to his followers, "Come on, follow me." You know, the trend of this current cancel culture is to friend, follow, or move close to people who already share our values and our beliefs and our opinions. People who think like us and act like us and talk like us and vote like us and look like us. It's as if we're saying, "I want nothing to do with those people." You may not be aware of this, but that was not Jesus' approach. It was never a "those people" with Jesus. It's just people. I mean, just people, priceless people created in the image of God. Jesus put together a bunch of guys who would have never chosen to live next door to each other. They would have never connected on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat, or they wouldn't have been Facebook friends. And one of those followers was a guy named Matthew. Now, I don't know whether you've seen the miniseries, The Chosen. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. It is so good. But Matthew is my favorite character in the Chosen. And I love how they portray this guy. It's just young, very introverted, super smart, really, really great with numbers. And he doesn't fit in with anybody because he was considered, you know, one of those people. Matthew was a tax collector who worked for the Roman government, which was the enemy to the Jews. He wasn't accepted by anyone outside of his despised peer group. The Romans looked down on him, and they used him. His own people, the Jews, disdained him as a patriotic, non-patriotic sellout. His own family rejected him. Guys like him were looked at as the scum of the earth. But one day, Jesus says two life-changing words to Matthew: "Follow me." Matthew probably looked around and thought, "You talking to me? Nobody ever picks me." But he senses something different in Jesus, maybe some hope. So he accepts the invitation to follow Jesus. And the first thing he does is open up his home and throw a party. And he invites Jesus and his diverse band of disciples and a whole bunch of other those people. I want you to see what Matthew himself writes down. I think it's really cool that he writes this down. It's in the first book of the New Testament. And I'm just thinking as he wrote it, he's probably getting choked up remembering back. Check out what it says. As Jesus was walking along, again, this is him writing about himself, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. "Follow me and be my disciple," Jesus said to him. So I, Matthew, got up and followed him. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. Now, in that culture, sitting down and having a meal with somebody was a big deal because it identified you with them. And I just think it's cool that God identified with those people. Well, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples. They don't ask Jesus. They just pull a couple of disciples aside and say, why does your teacher eat with such scum? Now, he might be a pretty good teacher. He might be able to perform a few tricks here and there. He might possess a certain amount of charisma. But if he were truly from God, then he would know just what kind of trash those people are. He wouldn't be hanging out with them, and he certainly would not be eating with them. Well, Jesus overhears them. And I kind of like to imagine Jesus laughing with a mouth full of food with Matthew's buddies, and he responds from across the room. He says, healthy people, they don't need a doctor. Sick people do. And then he adds, now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. For I have come to call not those who think they're righteous, but those who know they're sinners. Now, Jesus here is not saying the Pharisees were healthy, good people who didn't need a doctor. In fact, he alludes to them being lost in their sense of superiority and self-righteousness. When he says, go and learn what this means, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Jesus is quoting the Old Testament, which the Pharisees were famous for knowing forwards and backwards because they were like all-stars at performing religious rituals and all the while busy keeping all their rules. They were hanging signs on doors. They were putting labels on people. They were ignoring the poor and the vulnerable and the marginalized. So Jesus is saying, you know the scriptures. You know what God has already said. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. But you don't really know what it means, because if you did, you wouldn't keep elevating yourself and putting labels on other people and hanging keep out signs on the door of God's kingdom. One of the things I noticed about Jesus is that the only people he was ever harsh with were the narrow-minded, bigoted, judgmental, were just a little bit superior to everybody else kind of people. He exposed all the rigid man-made rules of their prejudice, their social order, and their religious rule-keeping, and he expressed the true heart of God. And Jesus Christ opened the door to the kingdom of God for everyone. And they hated him for it. Some of you know that 10 years ago, our kids moved to Southern California to launch a new church, and it has been an incredible ride. And God has touched the lives of so many people. We've been out there helping them for the past 8 years, and we've had the opportunity to plant two more churches up the coast and working on their third campus there in the Ventura County area. I got to teach there a few weeks ago. And I was so moved by the kinds of people looking for hope. And I just felt so confident that they were going to find it there in this old remodeled warehouse of a building. And I think I may have shown you this before, but this is the sign over the doors of the auditorium. And I get a little choked up when I see it because I watch my two boys paint those letters. And I see all kinds of people walking through those doors because it's true. Jesus wants everybody to find hope. I want everybody to find this hope. I want them to find grace. I want them to find new life, that there is freedom and there is forgiveness, that there are fresh starts, that there's this incredible inside-out transformation that can happen in a person's life when they come to know Jesus Christ, and there's this unexplainable peace that just wraps us up. There is hope for everyone, athletes and addicts, porn stars and painters, preppies and realtors and rednecks and nerds and nurses and prom queens and principals and Pharisees and pharmacists and programmers and pastors. There is hope for everyone. And I pray that we will all be people who help other people walk through that door and find hope. I've always loved this piece written by Sam Shoemaker. He was a pastor who was a part of the original Oxford group that started AA years ago. And every time I read it, I can barely get through it because it reminds me of what God has called me to do. He writes, I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only a wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside that door. As starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find Him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints. Go all the way in. Go down to the cavernous cellars, way up to the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements, of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and height of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in. Sometimes I venture in a little farther. But my place seems to be closer to the opening. So I stand by the door. There's another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid and feel a cosmic claustrophobia, and they want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. So someone must be by the door watching for the frightened, who seek to sneak out just where they came in to tell them how much better it is inside. You see, people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving because they're preoccupied with the wonder of it all. So somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too. I stand by the door. I admire people who go way in. But I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet even found the door. Or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place near enough to God to hear Him and to know He is there, but not so far from men as not to hear them. And remember, they're there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them. Millions of them, but more important to me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I intend to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I had rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. You know, I love this church, and I'm so grateful for those of you who open doors for people to find hope. I just met a guy this morning in the lobby. He said, man, I was Matthew. Didn't fit in. Felt like I was a scum of the earth. That's what he called himself. Felt like I was a scum of the earth. I'd done a bunch of things, affairs, addictions. And now to see him just filled with light and filled with hope because he found Jesus here at this church. And I was thinking back this week, I didn't realize it had been this long, but I've been coming here for 14 years now. And I know I'm not the lead pastor here, but I think I speak for Chip and every campus pastor and every one of our elders and every staff person in saying there will only ever be one door, one sign hanging on the door at Pine Lake, and it's this one. You are welcome here. It doesn't matter how old or young you are. You are welcome here. It doesn't matter how much money you have. You are welcome here. What kind of car you drive, what kind of home you live in, what part of town you're from, you're welcome here. It doesn't matter what the color of your skin is, how big you are, how strong you are, how smart you are, how physically gifted or physically limited that you are. You're welcome here. It doesn't matter what you have done in your past. how many mistakes, how many failures and screw-ups that you have racked up, you are welcome here. It doesn't matter what's going on right now in your present situation, how desperate you might feel, how broken you may feel, how lonely you may feel, you need to know you are welcome here. There really is hope for everyone. I love what the book of Revelation says as it lays a welcome mat by the door. It says, come. Whoever is thirsty, let him come. Whoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. Gang, Jesus Christ has opened the door to the kingdom of God. He has opened the door for you and me to have a relationship with Him. He is the lover of your soul. He's been longing to welcome you home because it's true. There is hope for everyone. Everyone. Let's just bow our heads for a moment. You know, maybe that was the furthest thing from your mind today when you decided to go to church or to log on and watch. That there was hope for you. And I've been praying all week long that God would just ambush you, just blindside you with His grace and hope today. No matter where you've been or what you're feeling right now, it's been my prayer all week long that God would just flood your soul with hope today. Because there's a lot of things in this life that are overrated, but hope is not one of them. And Jesus Christ died and rose from the dead to give us hope, a living hope, a hope that will not disappoint. And He wants to give it to anybody who will humbly ask for it. So maybe right now, you can just humbly say, Jesus, I need hope. I need some help right now. I need to know that things are going to be okay. I need to know that I'm forgiven. I need to know that I fit in. I need to know that I'm accepted by You, that I'm loved by You. I need to know I'm okay. I need to know that You don't see me as those people. You just see me as a priceless child created in Your image. I need to know that today, God. Father, I pray today that those humble prayers are going up right now. That they would know You're just longing to welcome them home. Father, I know that maybe there are people here this weekend that were here last weekend and they heard the wolf's story and it related to them so much and feels like things are coming unraveled in their world right now. And I pray that today they would sense that there really is hope for everyone, like for them too. And I pray for the person who just feels like they've done too much, gone too far, run too far away, screwed up too much to ever be accepted by You. And I pray that the story of Matthew and all of his buddies would just resonate with them today. They would know that Jesus came to help people who will acknowledge the fact they need God. And Father, it's my prayer today that Pine Lake would always be a place with a welcome mat by the front door. Doors wide open to anybody who's looking for hope. Thank You for the way that's happening in every campus. And I pray it happens more and more and more as we are people who stand by the door and try to take our friends and family's hands and put it on the latch so they can find the door that opens up to You. Father, that's my prayer today. In the name of Jesus, amen. Today, if you'd like prayer for something going on in your life, maybe you need some hope today. Maybe today is a day you say, Jesus Christ, I'm coming home. Thank You for welcoming me. I want to come home. Well, we're going to have some great people down front who've been exactly where you're at, and they would love to pray with you today. So we're going to sing a worship song, and as we do, why don't you just get up out of your seat, come on down front. We'd love to pray with you down front. So let's stand up together, and let's worship.